Abraham Lincoln struggled with depression, major and chronic, his entire life. And Lincoln scholar Joshua Wolfshank claims it was depression that fueled Lincoln's extraordinary rise to power and prepared him to lead the nation through its darkest days. Joshua Wolfshank's new book, Lincoln's Melancholy, is published by Houghton Mifflin. I'm very pleased to welcome him to my show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So what did the term melancholy mean for those living in the middle of the 19th century? Are we talking about bipolar? Are we talking about regular depression or anything where somebody was moody?
You know, melancholy was a term that was used to refer to a bunch of different states. And in fact, the relationship between those states is one of the distinguishing characteristics of the conceptions of mental health and mental illness at that time. The idea was that you could have a melancholy temperament and be inclined to sadness and self-criticism and so forth in a very ordinary way. And that having that condition, having that temperament suited you to many great things, but it also set you up for the danger of tipping into a state of melancholia, which is very similar to the disease state of depression.
And were people concerned? His law partner said Lincoln's melancholy dripped from him as he walked. Mm. Was he that glum?
He was. That description probably referred to him in his later years. You ask if people were concerned, and in his early life, in his mid-20s and early 30s, when he had these two spectacular breakdowns, there was profound concern among his friends and colleagues to the point that people were physically keeping watch over Lincoln to keep him from hurting himself and were openly talking about the possibility that he might go crazy.
Well, my sense of Lincoln's earlier years are of a rather happy kid. What happened? Was he always depressed, or is this something that hit him when he was about 25 or 26?
Lincoln's very early years are shrouded in mystery. He was surrounded by people who were mostly illiterate and who lived in an inaccessible region. So the historians of that day didn't get to them nearly so much as they did to the people in Illinois in this village called New Salem, where he lived from his early 20s on. The accounts from that time are much richer, and they show a young man that, as you say, was full of good cheer. He was the sort of guy who would cheer up other people when they were down. And it was a shock to people when he was 26 and he fell into this terrible depression. Now, whether it's something that was lingering under the surface or it really did come on to him out of the blue, we don't know. We do know that it did come on in a very dramatic fashion.
To the point where they kept knives away from him during those periods. And we don't know what caused the episode. Although depression is something that can suddenly be triggered. When Thomas Eagleton, who was George McGovern's running mate in 1972, was revealed to have been hospitalized on three occasions for depression, he was forced to drop out of the race. Do you think that American attitudes toward this sort of thing have changed over the years?
Well, it's certainly been a radical change from Lincoln's time, and there are two strong respects to that change. One is that the public eye is so firmly fixed on people's private lives now that there isn't such a thing as a private life, and my book is one indication of that. We are hungry for these stories, and we think nothing of going into the innermost depths and telling these stories. There also was a very different attitude about melancholy at that time. Lincoln's contemporaries, his close friends and colleagues, saw this aspect of him. They puzzled over it in some respects. It was a strange source of admiration in some respects, but There's no indication that they thought that it disqualified him or in any way was ill-suited him for office.
Didn't many historians just ignore the contemporary testimonies about his depression for a time?
For most of the 20th century, it was pushed so far to the margins that many people grew up, as I grew up, not knowing anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Mostly in the 40s. And then in the 80s, everything changes. Any idea why?
Sure. There are a couple of factors. One is, as we're discussing, this sense of public figures' private lives came into the mainstream in a sense that, even though this hasn't really affected our politics, there's a very firm sense in culture and in biography, that people's weaknesses and debilities and idiosyncrasies are not inconsistent and not a separate story from the things that they do on stage. There's also been a very important shift in history itself. Oral history, as we now call it, is considered to be a crucial tool for research, but it was very much maligned in the mid-century. And so much of what we know about Lincoln's early life and his inner life comes from oral history, and the disdain for that in the 40s and 50s contributed to this pushing the story to the side.
You say, as a culture, I'm quoting, Americans have strangely decided to endow optimism with unqualified favor. Politicians today compete to be the most optimistic and accuse their opponents of pessimism as if it were a defect. So was Lincoln pessimistic?
He did tend towards pessimism, and this is not necessarily a feature of clinical depression. You don't have to be seriously depressed to be a pessimist. This is the temperamental side of his melancholia, which, by the way, you know, the way that I'm looking at Lincoln is through the lens of melancholy in his years, much more than from the modern perspective. But he was indeed a pessimist. He tended to look at the world and see the things that were missing and see the problems. And he tended to look at the future that way, too.
But that could be good for problem solving, a lot better than just entering everything with the idea that kind of in a state of denial, everything's okay.
When we look back at the war and the problems before the war, the problem of slavery, and we see the way Lincoln insisted that this is a serious problem, that it needed to be dealt with seriously, and he devoted himself to articulating forcefully the nature of the problem and exhorting his fellow Americans to act and to act with the future in mind, we see that his pessimism, in fact, was extremely well-suited to the times.
You said that there was no definitive explanation for his first experience with depression in his mid-20s, but during the summer of 1835, Anne Rutledge, a charming young woman who often has been rumored to have been his first love, died. Would it be too simplistic to say that that triggered it?
I think so. Lincoln himself provided the best explanation after his second breakdown in the early 1840s, his early 30s. He wrote to a friend and said that they shared what he called a nervous temperament. He also used the phrase nervous debility, and he was referring to a melancholy temperament. He said that this was the general condition that underlaid their whole experience, and it made them vulnerable to these collapses if certain particular conditions were met. And he identified several things, one of which was bad weather, which was a characteristic of both his breakdowns. So it was a sense that there is this overall, and then these little things can come in and trigger them. They're not little things, of course, in both these breakdowns, but compared to the temperamental condition, it is small, because according to Lincoln's view, you needed to have that sort of predisposition for these things to really matter. And indeed, optimistic people who are sanguine, can pass through all manner of difficulty without great trouble.
Also, depressives sometimes overreact to small events, and the major ones don't overwhelm them. But he had his share: severe political troubles, profound doubts about Mary Todd. He, like most people of his era, he suffered from loss of friends to typhoid fever, the deaths of two sons, a wife with mental illness, some major career setbacks. He didn't win the Senate seat. So we tend not to think about those as much as all of his great victories, is becoming, in some people's minds, the greatest president we ever had. But do you think that all of those would have contributed to the depression?
You know, Lincoln's depressive temperament seems to have had its primary features set in his young manhood, but it did evolve over his lifetime. And these many disappointments that you refer to certainly seem wrapped up in it.
What led to the suicidal talk? Were there any specific triggers for that?
Well, that was the only time that Lincoln talked about thinking of killing himself was when he was a young man, and then again when he was president. It disappeared in his middle life. He was much more stoic and quiet, and had this quiet, pained look on his face a lot. But to go back to these early stories, they're both periods of dramatic difficulty. The second breakdown is the one that we know the most about. They've both been simplified. The first one you hear about is, you know, Ann Rutledge died, therefore Lincoln got depressed. The second one, the typical story is he had trouble with his fiancée, Mary Todd, and therefore he got depressed. But they're both much richer, much more complex and fascinating stories of a young man who wants so much and has really put himself on the line, coming from nowhere, coming from the woods of Kentucky and Indiana into this much more cultured environment, and really going for a political career, a legal career, which was outlandish for a man of no educational background, and was trying to join this cultural elite in a way that was very trying for him.
On the other hand, you get the sense that what got him through was this irrepressible desire to achieve something meaningful.
That's right. And this was.
And if he'd killed himself or allowed himself to be overwhelmed by the melancholy, he wouldn't have been able to function.
This is the linchpin moment of Lincoln's early life, seen through the lens of his melancholy. And that is, after his second breakdown, he was talking to his friend Joshua Speed. And Speed said, "You know, you need to get it together or you're not going to survive this." And Lincoln said, "I'm not afraid to die. I could kill myself, but I won't, because I believe that there is something for me to live for." And decades later, after he had issued the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, but before its final issuance, and it was a ferociously controversial thing, his old friend Joshua Speed showed up as an opponent of the Emancipation Proclamation. And Lincoln said, "Do you remember that time I was so depressed that I was thinking of killing myself, and I said I would live because I thought I could do something meaningful?" He said, "With this, I hope my fondest hopes might be realized."
My guest is Joshua Wolf Schenck. His book, Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged the President and Fueled His Greatness, it is published by Houghton Mifflin. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Joshua Wolf Schenck, whose book, Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness, is published by Houghton Mifflin. Did he seek medical help at any point of his depressions?
He did. He used a medication called the Blue Mass, which was a mercury pill, off and on.
Mercury is not the ideal drug, is it? It causes mercury poisoning.
It is a poison, and in fact, the benefit at that time was considered to be, you know, it was considered to act as a diuretic, and it expelled the body of what they thought was black bile. In fact, we now know that, you know, anytime you ingest a poison, your body's going to try and get rid of that poison as quickly as possible. The distinguishing feature of Lincoln's contact with the medical profession was that he tended to be left worse off than before the contact was initiated. And the therapies that helped him are these common sense therapies that he turned to on his own accord and really developed very consciously in his middle years.
Wasn't cocaine one of the drugs that was prescribed?
This was one of the things that was on the list of Lincoln's charge account at the pharmacy. The Blue Mass is the only drug that we know specifically that he took. The others may have been for his family, but I refer to that list to give people a sense of the culture of pharmacology in the mid-19th century, which ranged from these barbaric treatments of mercury and so forth to cocaine, which has been used as an antidepressant throughout history, and also opium. And it may have been that in small doses on the side, Lincoln used these other substances. But what we principally know of his treatment are these things that he did to take care of himself in private.
Although he did really call his doctor, Dr. Anson Henry, necessary to my existence. And then he wrote to his law partner after leaving the care of Dr. Henry, "I'm now the most miserable man living. If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would not be one cheerful face on earth. Whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I awfully forebode I shall not. To remain as I am is impossible. I must die or be better, it appears to me."
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, we don't know whether Henry's treatment was helping Lincoln through that time or actually making him worse. If you read that period very closely, you see he went into treatment with Dr. Henry, and when he came out, he wrote that letter, and he looked terrible. He looked like he was a whole other person. He was so thin and emaciated, and all of his appearances resonate with the way someone would have looked having gone through the typical treatment for what they called hypochondriasis, which was a form of melancholia, and that are these all, this whole range of barbaric treatments from bloodletting and leeching and hot baths followed by cold baths and mercury and so forth.
Much has been made about the photograph on the cover of your book, but this was taken way after that. He does look emaciated and melancholic here as well. This is while he was already president?
No, that was just after his nomination by the Republican Party. This gorgeous photograph of Lincoln without the beard. He grew the beard after he was elected president. And it's the reason I love it so much is that he is probably, it's probably a photographer's mistake. He's gazing up past the sight line of the camera, and it looks up as though he's peering into the distance with this pained look on his face. And that's those two elements of Lincoln that really drew me to this story, the sense that he suffered tremendously, he articulated his suffering, he asked for help, and he looked to get better and developed himself assiduously with this sense of looking for something in the distance, looking for meaning, looking for purpose, looking to do something with his life.
A number of people have written about links between depression and genius, although there have been any number of geniuses who have never been depressed. What are your feelings about that?
There are aspects of Lincoln's genius that resonate with what we know of melancholy and now depression. His piercing insight into the troubled nature of his time and his creative response to adversity and this profound humility that developed in him that was very much related to his spiritual response to his own personal suffering. These are characteristics of his great work as a anti-slavery leader in the late 1850s and as president. It's certainly not the only element, and we have to consider Lincoln from many angles to know him fully. But when we look at him through the angle of his melancholy, we learn all kinds of new things about him, and we'll learn all kinds of new things about melancholy itself.
Well, we have had geniuses who did not get good treatment, like Vincent van Gogh. On the other hand, Graham Greene claimed that he could not have achieved as much as he had if lithium hadn't been made available.
Hmm. Well, this is the point that's made, to counter a romanticization of melancholy and suffering, that very often these treatments are keeping people alive. And indeed, with Lincoln, his suffering as a young man is very striking, but he also got a great deal of help. And if some of it was medical, a lot of it was just the human impulse of the people around him to take care of this man who needed their taking care of. And if it wasn't for that, who knows what would have become of him.
According to the World Health Organization, depression affects more than 100 million people a year. It's the world's leading cause of disability. In 2000, about 1 million people worldwide killed themselves, about equal to the number of deaths that year from war and homicide combined. Mm.
Yeah, it's staggering. I think one of the reasons that that my book is getting a response is that there is so much suffering, and it is so hard to account for, even as we live in this golden age of treatments and awareness.
Well, you admit to being suffering from depression yourself. Did you turn to Lincoln's struggle for inspiration?
Not really. I did find inspiration in it. I wasn't so much looking for inspiration at the time I began the study as I was looking to satisfy two desires. One was an intellectual fascination with stories of suffering, and the other was this deep personal need to connect with stories of people who suffered and sought to articulate it. It wasn't so much that Lincoln's life turned out the way it did that drew me to his story, but that he did what he did as a young man, that he had these profound depressions and that he was so energetic and forceful in articulating it. It was so rare in my environment at the time, in Washington, D.C., as a reporter in this very conservative, traditional culture, to have this kind of openness and honesty, and to have it coming from Lincoln was so astonishing to me that I set out on this journey that led to this book.
Would it be fair to say that Lincoln triumphed over his depression after his second depressive episode?
I wouldn't use that language because it suggests that the suffering went away or that Lincoln's accomplishments were somehow the antithesis to his suffering, when in fact he continued to suffer terribly, and in many respects things got worse and worse for him as he did better and better. I mean, this is a man who became an anti-slavery leader at a time of profound trial, who was elected president, much to the surprise of his contemporaries, and immediately faced a war and had to, you know, experience this prospect that is scarcely imaginable to us mortals, that to be responsible for the thousands of deaths, hundreds of thousands of deaths that unfolded in the Civil War.
But even but before that, he became the first candidate from his party to win the presidency. He became the 16th president of the United States before that job became watered down. I mean, there only had been 15 before him. He must have seen that as a major triumph. Didn't that cheer him up?
Yeah, he did experience triumphs. I wouldn't say that he triumphed over his suffering or over his depression. These things coexisted and intertwined, and it became part of this magnificent and also very sad whole. You know, at the very end of his life, Lincoln did experience finally a break in this agony from the war. And yet he was clearly a changed man in the last days of his life. And yet there's this very touching moment just before he went to Ford's Theater. He's walking back from the War Department with his bodyguard and had been in great spirits all that day. And his bodyguard said that he then saw him sort of slip into this very profound state of sadness. And it gives you a sense of what he was like day to day, capable of tremendous engagement, certainly capable, as you say, of recognizing his accomplishments, but also feeling the pain of life and his life in particular acutely.
Well, in the 19th century, there was a kind of a melancholic hero type. Byron is another case. Does he fit into that?
He was very much influenced by that character type, and that probably played a big role in him being so open about his suffering as a young man. There's a sense almost that it benefited him in that people were so drawn to him in the strange way as a young man. Lincoln later went the other way. You know, there are these two strands in the culture. There is the romantic strand that Byron represents, but there's also this Enlightenment sense of rational behavior. And a lot of Lincoln's middle years was devoted to cultivating that aspect of his character, to the point that people who knew him in that time saw him as very removed and enigmatic and distant, very much unlike the sort of gushing man that you hear in the letter that you just read.
So do you think that Lincoln figuring out how to deal with his own problems developed some of the necessary tools to deal with the country's problems?
I do. I see a resonance there. His ability to see the problems plainly, to live with the reality of what was happening around him, and to take active, though humble, steps in response with an eye fixed on the horizon for what might be possible. These are things that he did in his private life, and these are things that he did in his public life. Whether I don't argue that one is the cause of the other, but it's certainly worth noting that there is this resonance. And most moving to me, this philosophy that Lincoln developed, that he clung to in his private life and that became one of the linchpins of his public life as well, the sense that we're radically imperfect beings, we live in a world of suffering and radical imperfection, and we can get better. We'll never be perfect, but we can move slowly and doggedly to a vision of what we might become. this was something that, he enacted in, both the private and in the public sphere.
Isn't this what's been called depressive realism?
I think it's related. Depressive realism is, a modern term, and it comes out of this research that shows that people who are depressed, while they have many problems that we're very well aware of, they often can see certain situations more clearly than people who are optimistic. And that is one of, a number of pieces of empirical modern psychological research that I discuss because it, seems to bear on Lincoln's experience.
Well, since depression is a spectrum, some people are incapacitated by their depression and others develop tools for coping.
That's right.
And in his case, he goes on to become one of the greatest, if not the greatest, presidents we ever had.
Yeah. You know, at times he was seemed incapacitated too. It's not the dominant feature of his presidency, but there were moments when people were really worried about Lincoln. He in a sense, regressed to the earlier state that he experienced as a very young man, and being so open and honest about his personal pain that were people were really amazed by it. And yet, you know, there's this gorgeous story of a senator coming upon Lincoln in one of his times of, trial in 1863, and he says to him, "Mr. President, you really need to take care of yourself because we're all depending on you." And Lincoln looked at him and took his hand and said, "Browning," this is the senator's name, "I must die sometime." And they both had tears in their eyes, and yet one crucial detail of that story is that Browning found Lincoln writing, and when he left, he was writing again. So there's a sense of this man deeply pained, such that he, causes worry in one of his colleagues and, friends, and yet doing this work that, as we know, was not only you know, crucial to guiding the country through this time of trial, but also has become the cornerstone of American life.
Well, he had a dream the night before he was assassinated that foreshadowed his death, but I get the sense that he might have had any number of dreams of that sort, because he thought so much about death.
That's right. And you
know, what about dealing with his wife, Mary Todd, who had mental illness as well?
Yeah. She was a troubled woman, and the at the times that their lives intersected, they seemed to have brought more trouble to each other. And it's a very sad story in many respects. And her story certainly gets sadder and sadder. She became known as an insane woman, was committed to an asylum after her husband's death. Though I'm focused on his story here and only bring her in when she influences or affects his life in some clear way.
But I would imagine somebody who has his own mental problems having to also be strong for somebody who has worse mental problems, has the whole situation exacerbated. Or maybe, like dealing with the nation in troubled times, he had to pull himself through and act better than he might have normally.
Yeah. You know, there's this dramatic change in Lincoln in his early 30s. And one of the reasons that I was not able to bring any modern psychological theory to bear on this, and I had to turn to Lincoln's story to suggest its own theory, which is the story of his life, is that you see these opposite things happening. As a young man, he was all about being incredibly open, radically open about his suffering and his struggle. In his early 30s, he became much quieter, and his marriage at the age of 33 may indeed have affected that.
I hope he had the solace of religion. At least I gather he had a Bible by his bed. Joshua Wolfshank's latest writing is Lincoln's Melancholy, How Depression Challenged a President and Fueled His Greatness. It's from Houghton Mifflin. Thank you so much.